Traditionally, private M&A has been a great fit for rep and warranty insurance because you have a group of sellers seeking to replace an indemnity and a group of buyers that can benefit from looking to an insurer to replace the indemnity structure, whether it's 10% of holdback or even more sometimes. And part of the reason that that functions well is that the reps survive the closing in a private transaction. In a public transaction, public M&A, the reps don't survive. And so traditionally, the buyers have had no recourse post-closing. But for buyers that are looking to subvert that kind of traditional situation or scenario where they're taking on all of the risk post-closing, you can look to a rep and warranty insurance policy. And we've seen some really interesting ways of going about that. One of the hurdles that you have to cross and just think about is that traditionally the disclosures in a public transaction are really just limited to kind of what's publicly disclosed. And so if you are thinking about using a rep and warranty insurance policy for a take private, you have to get the sellers comfortable with a certain level of disclosure and maybe early on have them involved in a scheduling process where you have disclosures against the reps that will get an insurer comfortable that they're not taking on risk that they wouldn't normally, be responsible for. And sellers may not be willing to do that, and sometimes we see the buyers go through that exercise, and the buyers are actually willing to take on the scheduling burden. One thing that can also help in that construct is just establishing a certain materiality threshold for purposes of the schedules. So, you establish a dollar threshold and then you schedule against that. And it can be somewhat involved, but it's a great way for buyers to have recourse where they didn't traditionally have it in public M&A.
Excellent. Thank you. So now, using a case study, why don't you talk a little bit, Kathy, about Anaplan?
Sure. So speaking of... Oh, did I
lose it? Or?
They're like toggling us okay. on and off.
Okay. So speaking of scheduling sort of and being mindful of like disclosure schedules and what's included, Anaplan is an interesting case study where shortly after the deal was signed, Anaplan asked TOMA to allow them to grant $50 million in merit-based equity grants, which had already been allocated and promised to certain employees and had not been sort of included in the disclosure schedules against Section 5.1 of their merger agreement. Now, their merger agreement provided for that amendment to sort of company benefit plans would be permitted so long as they were routine and did not result in a material increase in benefit or cost to the company, which I think is common language that we often sort of see in those types of provisions, so a very standard sort of formulation of that in the agreement. On a net basis, they argue that it was only a $32 million increase because the basket... The increase in the pool was to 137 from 105, and that they had sort of previously disclosed, and TOMA had seen sort of this, not in the disclosure schedules, but in the business plan and in other sort of documentation. TOMA rejected Anaplan's request. They said that it would increase the purchase price. They argue that the language around sort of material increase in benefit or cost of the company should not be measured on a net basis. It should be measured on sort of an absolute basis with respect to those incremental grants and that the merger agreement was violated. Anaplan sort of, came back and said, we understand what you're saying and proposed a solution whereby they would sort of, certain of their executives would voluntarily forfeit a portion of the grant so that they would be able to nonetheless sort of fit within the parameters of the basket and not grant certain employees that had sort of make certain grants to for future employees that had not yet begun working. TOMA again sort of rejected Anaplan's solution and sort of pointed to employee morale and said that notwithstanding sort of the proposed sort of new formulation that they sort of didn't agree with the proposal that they had been that they had made certain grants without their consent, that they hadn't been disclosed to them on the disclosure schedules and otherwise, and that a breach of the merger agreement had happened. They demanded compensation, and specifically that the purchase price or the per share price be reduced from $66 per share to $61 per share this is all sort of disclosed in the subsequent proxy statement, so you guys can sort of read it like we did. It's all sort of public information, the back and forth that happened. Anaplan went to their advisors, to their financial advisors, to sort of seek advice. And their financial advisors rightfully sort of told them that the markets had significantly deteriorated in the interim and that a sort of a modest price cut was their best path forward. From a timing perspective, just to provide context for it, you know, as I said, the agreement was signed on March 20th. These sort of price renegotiation discussions happened at the end of May and the beginning of June, where the markets had obviously sort of shifted in a different direction, particularly with respect to tech companies. So with that sort of price renegotiation started, there was a back and forth, as you can see from the page, you know, between them as to sort of the appropriate price. And they finally sort of struck a deal, a new deal at $63.75.